Michael felt his heart swell as Big Red swam toward the Texas shore. His mind went back to that first crossing with Papa and the other Tennesseans, to a time bright with hope and promise and adventure. The thrill of coming into a new and unknown land. As the horse brought him out on the other side, Michael knew a sudden, wild, and unexpected exhilaration.
After all these years, I am back in Texas.
If compelled, he would admit that the land looked much the same on the Texas side of the river. The vegetation was the same, and the sweet green smell of it was on the wind. But something was different, something intangible. Michael knew the difference came from within himself. The magic was not in the land, it was in the idea. But magic it was, whatever the source. He allowed his memory full rein, carrying him back to those first grand happy days, to the shining dream in his father's eyes. The tracks of the soldiers' horses were easy to follow, and Rodriguez evidenced no attempt to make it difficult. He probably had little fear of anyone coming after him from the Louisiana side. If he was afraid of anything, it was probably his own men. It would be obvious to him after a while that he had suffered another desertion, that the steel-edged discipline he had imposed upon his command was breaking down. It was, Lucero declared, indicative of the breaking of Mother Spain's long hold on colonial Mexico. Eli, old enough to remember some of it, said that it was not unlike the American colony's final break from King George and England. Rodriguez represented to Mexico somewhat the same symbol that the loyalist Tories had represented to the American colonies. And when the inevitable break finally came, he must know he would suffer the consequences. Except that Michael, Eli, and Lucero did not intend for him to live that long. The trail became fresher as late afternoon wore on toward dusk. Once, as the three riders topped a small rise, they sighted the soldiers far ahead. Eli halted immediately and stepped down from his horse to present less of a profile against the horizon. He led the animal to the edge of a screening grove of trees. Michael and Lucero joined him. Michael squinted, then placed the tips of his forefingers to the corners of his eyes and stretched the skin to sharpen his vision, a trick he had seen his father use.
Well, they haven't shown any excitement. I doubt they saw us. Best I can tell, Rodriguez is bringing up the rear, trying to keep all his men in sight so none of them can drop off behind him and make a run back for the Sabine. We'll just roll along slow and easy. Our best is to go slip into their camp tonight and see if we can catch him unawares.
Eli gave Michael a quick and questioning glance. Michael said nothing, though he suspected his face revealed his distaste for the tactic. They rested the horses a while, giving Rodriguez time to travel a little farther, and perhaps encourage him to some degree of complacency, at least about any pursuit. His main concern now would be to keep from losing more of his command. They resumed their ride a while later.
It may be hard to catch him in his sleep because he ain't liable to do much sleeping. If any more soldiers have desertion on their minds, he knows they'll take their leave as soon as he starts to snore.
If you come up with a better idea, just tell us.
Dusk deepened into darkness. The tracks were hard to see. Eli began to lead his horse.
We'll move slow and watch our step, else we're liable to run upon them before we know it.
Michael and Lucero did as Eli had.
Damn, in this dark I can't see a thing.
We know their direction. We'll come up on them by and by.
Presently, Michael caught the scent of wood smoke on a light breeze from the west. Then he saw the red glow of a campfire. He tapped Eli's shoulder.
Found him.
They led their horses to within less than 100 yards of the camp, near enough for Michael to worry that one of the animals might nicker to the soldiers' mounts and give them away. But that risk offset another, that when they'd completed their mission, they might be overrun afoot before they could reach their horses. It was Michael's guess that if they killed Rodriguez and nobody else, the soldiers would give them little difficulty. They might even cheer. The soldiers had made camp on a sparsely wooded prairie. Michael saw figures moving as black silhouettes between himself and the fire.
How can we pick Rodriguez out from amongst the others? It's bad enough killing him this way like a possum in a trap. It'd be a heap sight worse to kill some common soldier by mistake and leave that dirty bastard breathing.
We'll manage.
Eli motioned for Michael to sit down. Lucero already had.
They're still up and moving around too much. We'll wait till they've taken to their blankets.
That was no answer, but it was all Eli was going to offer. The old man stretched himself out on the ground. Michael watched him in surprise. Eli was actually going to try to catch a nap. Michael could only shake his head in disbelief. Lucero sat up, his back against a tree. He whetted the blade of his knife against his leg. It was too dark to see his face, but Michael could guess the emotions which must be tearing at him. They would be something like his own, for Eli had told him of the crimes Rodriguez had perpetrated against Lucero's family. It was easier to understand Lucero's willingness to go through with this murder, that was what it would be, murder, than to accept it on Eli's part. The old man had lived on a rough frontier so long and had seen so much of violence that he must be hardened against dread or remorse. It was 2 hours, and perhaps more, before Eli finally raised up, casually stretched his arm, and gave the camp a leisurely study. Michael had not seen anyone move in some time.
You get any sleep?
Hell no. I don't see how you could.
In my business, a man eats when he can and sleeps when he can, because he don't know when he'll get his next chance at either one.
Eli turned to Lucero.
Listo?
Listo.
Lucero pushed up to his feet. Michael's pulse quickened, and he found his lips dry. That seemed strange because his hands were sticky wet against the long rifle.
How are we gonna know which one is Rodriguez?
We'll just have to look.
Michael couldn't remember when he'd heard an answer that told him less. He gritted his teeth in frustration. He was glad Andrew was not here to witness. His brother would take no pride in what they were about to do.
Me and you, we'll just leave it up to Lucero. He'll know. Our job's to help him get out of the camp alive.
Lucero had moved his rifle to his left hand. In his right, he carried the long knife. Michael shuddered, thinking how that sharp, cold blade would feel driving deep between a man's ribs or into his throat. They moved slowly, picking each step carefully. The smell of wood smoke was stronger now. Michael thought he could feel the campfire's warmth and realized his imagination was running away with him. He told himself he had better take a tighter grip on his nerves if he was going to tote his part of this load. Eli tapped him on the arm. He pointed his finger toward the camp. Lucero moved away to the left, making a small semicircle to come in from a bit farther around. Eli started to move away from Michael, then paused.
You all right?
Michael nodded stiffly. All right might not be quite the proper description, but he had made up his mind to go along the best he could. He would feel no compunctions about shooting Rodriguez squarely in the eye if the man were looking at him. Slashing the throat of a sleeping man was something he had not come prepared for. Not even the memory of his father's murder was enough to steel him for this. Maybe Rodriguez would be awake, fearing more desertions. Maybe he would see Lucero coming, not in time enough to stop him, but in time enough to know what was about to happen to him, and while dying, know he was paying for the cruelties he had wrought upon so many. Maybe as he lay spilling his blood upon the ground, he would even remember the day he had slaughtered Mordecai Lewis and the other Tennesseans. Michael would like to think so. That took a little of the edge from his distaste for the manner of vengeance. There should be a guard, but he couldn't see one. Perhaps Rodriguez didn't trust any of his men to move beyond the thin circle of firelight, lest they slip away from him. Michael tried to count the blanket-wrapped figures on the ground near the fire and came up short of the number he knew should be there. His heart was beating even faster now. Where the hell were they? Near him in the darkness, half blinded by the glow of the fire, Eli walked into a low-hanging tree branch and bumped his head solidly. Oh! He lost his footing and staggered forward. The long barrel of his rifle struck the branch again.
Guinness!
There was a guard. Or perhaps the cry came from Rodriguez himself. Michael saw the flash of a rifle or pistol. He couldn't tell which, and it didn't matter. Michael saw the awakened soldiers fling their blankets aside. Then, in the firelight, he saw the man he had come for, Rodriguez. His instinct was to jump up and run to save himself, but his mind told him this was his chance. Lucero's opportunity was probably spoiled anyway. Lying flat, Michael leveled the rifle and tried vainly to see its sights. He could hardly even see the barrel. He took what he hoped was good aim on the lieutenant's belly. The flash blinded him for a second, then he knew with a sinking feeling in his stomach, he had missed. Hunched low, Eli Pleasant ran to Michael.
Let's get! I've spilt it!
Disappointment washed over Michael, overwhelming even his sense of fear. He jumped to his feet and followed Eli in a long run out through the scattered timber toward the horses. They stopped after a little and looked back in the direction of the camp.
¿Qué estás haciendo? Te engaño.
Michael expected the soldiers to come spilling after them in hot pursuit. They did not. They fired a few desultory shots into the darkness, but they never ventured into it, afraid of what might be out there. Or Rodriguez was afraid to let them go beyond his sight. Lucero was a while in showing up. Michael worried that he might have caught one of those bullets fired in haste and panic from within the camp. But Lucero came, appearing suddenly out of the darkness, silent as a shadow. Eli explained in a shamed voice what had happened.
I'm getting too old for this. Old fart like me ought to be sitting on a front porch someplace with my boots off.
He's best. I chose my man. I was about to put my knife in his throat when the guard cried out. Then I saw that I had the wrong one. I would have killed him instead of Rodriguez. It is for the best.
Did anybody see you?
They were all too excited. But I heard Rodriguez curse the man. He thinks it was one of his own who tried to kill him. He would shoot them all if he could. But he would only have two shots. One from his rifle, and one from his pistol. And then they would be on him.
From the camp came sounds of horses and men stirring around.
They're breaking camp. They're moving on.
Sure as hell. We got Rodriguez all scared up now. But he'll be so busy watching his soldiers, he won't be watching us. That'll give us a better chance for another shot at him. Let's get our horses.
The way towards San Antonio de Bar was south. It quickly became evident that Rodriguez was traveling west.
To Nacogdoches. He fears his soldiers too much to travel with them all the way to Bar.
Which means we'll have a lot less time for that second chance. We'd better be a-riding.
The soldiers made enough racket at first that it was easy to follow them in the darkness. But somehow the pursuers lost them after an hour or so. Though Michael listened hard, he no longer heard any horses except their own.
Damn.
Though the moon had risen, the light was not enough for following tracks.
We know they're headed for Nacogdoches. We'll keep riding the same direction so they don't gain too much on us. Come morning, we ought to cut their sign.
And when we catch up to them, what?
I ain't got no more notion than a one-eyed squirrel. We'll figure it out when the time comes.
Daylight found them picking their way through an area too wooded to be considered an open prairie, but without enough trees to be a forest. The soldiers were neither to be seen nor heard. The three set a diagonal course generally northward for a while, then cut southward again, without finding tracks. It became evident to Michael that whatever their other talents might be, neither Eli nor Lucero would ever gain recognition for their ability as trackers.
I sort of wish Andrew was with us now. Papa taught him to track a bird flying across solid rock.
As I recollect, it was you told him he couldn't come.
And I was right. But just this minute we could use him. Gotta be tracks here somewhere.
Unless...
Unless what?
Unless we have passed them. Unless they are behind us, not in front of us.
Now that could be. If they slowed down for some reason, we could have gone on one side of them or the other and never knowed it. If we was to make us a little welter back the way we came...
Eli did not wait for concurrence. He just started riding. Lucero nodded at Michael and they hurried to catch up to the old man. They came upon the soldiers suddenly and unexpectedly. The meeting a jolting surprise to both sides. They gaped at each other across the space of a small clearing. Holding his breath until his lungs ached, Michael recognized Rodriguez. The officer spurred to come around in front of his horsemen. He had been riding behind them, keeping them all in sight lest some of them drop away. Rodriguez pointed his saber at the Americans. Michael leveled his rifle at the officer. For the second time, Michael missed a clear shot at Rodriguez.
Damn it, boys, we've spilt it again.
Eli whipped his horse about and put him into a hard run. Michael and Lucero were but half a length behind him. Looking back, Michael thought Rodriguez and the soldiers might be gaining. It was certain they were not losing any ground. Eli's horse stumbled, went to its knees, then scrambled unsteadily back to its feet. Hauling up quickly and facing back around to help, Michael saw blood welling from the animal's shoulder. Eli jumped to the ground. Michael freed his left stirrup so Eli could jam a foot into it and swing up behind it. The maneuver, though it took but a moment, allowed the soldiers to cut the space down by half between them and their quarry. Lucero pointed his rifle. The soldiers would not be long in overtaking a horse burdened by two riders. In desperation, Michael looked for some kind of protection. Ahead lay a depression, a washout created by runoff water. It wasn't much, but he saw nothing else. He pointed it out to Lucero, who was trying in vain to reload his rifle on the back of his running horse.
Drive it off there and keep it going. You can outrun them without me.
They'll kill you.
They'll kill us all if you stop.
For a wild moment, the temptation for self-preservation was strong, but Michael knew he could not yield to it. Had it not been for Eli Pleasant, he would have died in Texas 5 years ago. Now, he could not abandon Eli here to die alone, even though by staying with him, he might only ensure that they died again. The sorrel horse stumbled and fell as they rode down the steep wall of the washout. Michael rolled free and sprang to his feet, never losing his hold on the rifle. Eli scrambled, the horse almost stepping on him in its struggle to regain its feet. Lucero found a gentler slope and came down to join them as Michael turned to face the soldiers and furiously began reloading his rifle. Eli raised his rifle. The soldiers reined up and quickly looked for cover. Eli threw himself against the steep earthen wall and leveled his reloaded rifle across the top of it.
Hold still so I can get a bead on you, you son of a bitch!
Michael saw the officer grab at his side.
Ah, finally nicked him, by God. I didn't get him in the vitals, more of a pity.
For a moment, until Eli and Lucero reloaded their rifles, they would have been vulnerable to a charge. But the soldiers did not press it, and the moment was lost. All three men quickly had their weapons ready and waiting for a target. Rodriguez, the target of preference, had retreated behind trees and put himself out of immediate jeopardy. Michael had time now to survey their position. It was poor. Though the steep bank protected them from the point where the soldiers were, a higher slope behind would leave them exposed should any of the troops work their way around. To do so would momentarily put the soldiers in the line of fire. Michael suspected that it was a chance Rodriguez would sooner or later decide to take, with his men's lives, though probably not with his own.
If we'd had a little more time, I feel like we could have found ourselves a better place to light.
We will die if we remain here.
We'll die if we try to leave.
If you ain't got something useful to say, what's the use in talking at all?
Eli pointed to the wide patch of open ground between the gully and the little clump of trees where the soldiers waited uncertainly.
And they ain't wanting to charge us across there, I don't think. Not into three loaded rifles. 8-3 ain't fine odds when you know that 3 of the 8 is sure as hell gonna die.
But they could work around that high ground yonder and pick us off.
Yeah, they'll have a hard time reaching it without us getting them first. They know that. So all we gotta do is wait for dark and then slip out of here.
Dark? It's still morning.
The time will pass.
Michael remembered his mother reading something out of the Bible about people who had the faith of the mustard seed. A little to his left, a knoll overlooked the clump of trees, much as the rising ground behind them overlooked the gully in which they had taken refuge. If one of them could reach that knoll, he could make the soldier's present position untenable.
Debemos cargar través del campo abierto. Y matar a esos fugitivos a la vez. ¿Por qué no te vas, cobarde?
Michael pondered his chances of getting there. The odds were about those of an icicle in hell. The soldiers would shout, then get quiet a while, firing shots that kick up dust at the edge of the washout. Just a reminder, if one was needed, that they were still there and contemplating the next move.
He's trying to force them to make a run across that open ground. They're telling him to do it himself.
Perhaps he will die here at their hands and not ours.
That'd be fitting, but I'm a lot more worried about us dying at their hands.
The sun reached its midday peak and started down on the western side of a wide-open sky. Its summer heat bore heavily upon Michael, for it was stronger here than back in Tennessee, and this gully afforded no shade other than his hat. Burning sweat worked down into his eyes. He had to keep rubbing them to see. It bothered him a little that Eli could be so relaxed. He supposed the old smuggler had been in and out of so many tight spaces in his life that he could be dispassionate about it. Michael had been in several, but indifference was not in his makeup.
You know they'll come at us one way or another.
I expect so. Was I them, I would. They know we'll otherwise get away after dark.
You ever given much thought to dying, Eli?
Never was interested in it much. Always rather think about living. More future than that.
I come near dying in Texas once already.
Eli nodded toward Lucero.
So have him and me. We all have. And we're all still here. So why not take what you've got and enjoy it while you can?
Ain't much here to enjoy.
Sure there is. Sunshine instead of rain, birds singing in the trees. A man takes his blessings where he finds them.
During the long wait, Michael took refuge from the grim present by allowing his mind to wander back to Tennessee, to Papa, to Mama, to Joseph, and little Jonathan, and the other brothers and sisters and cousins he had left there. Now, facing a strong probability that he would never see the sun go down, he asked himself why he could not have been content there, why he had always had an itch to hunt for a better place. It was a restlessness he had inherited from Papa, and Papa from his father. It was a Lewis family curse, a restlessness that had no cure, for Papa had hunted all his life and not found a place where he could long remain content. Somewhere there was always something better. A better place. This was sure as hell not it. He thought again of the pleasurable night he had lain in the blankets with Sally Boone, and that memory led him finally to Marie Villeray. He thought of dark eyes and dark hair. He wished he could run his hand through it now. Of soft lips that had pressed eagerly against his own, that had invited him to stay. Her memory came as a melancholy reminder of what he was about to lose. Yet it was also a solace of sorts, and he thought perhaps he understood why his restless father had married in spite of all the good reasons not to. No matter how long or how far Mordecai had roamed, he always knew the comfort of having a place to go home to, a woman to go home to, loving him regardless of his shortcomings, taking him for richer or poorer, mostly poorer, accepting him for what he was, though this sometimes brought her more than her proper portion of pain. Marie would be like that. And maybe for her he could change. Maybe for her he could put aside the wanderlust. Maybe, like his older brother Joseph, he could find contentment in home and hearth and settle down to being a husband and a farmer. Thinking of Marie, of his family back home, he wondered darkly, if he died here, would they ever know? Or would they go through the years uncertain what had become of him, knowing only that he had ridden off into the Texas country and was swallowed up in its vastness, never to be seen or heard of again? The thought left him empty and cold.
Eli, you ever been married?
Well, it depends on what you consider married. Never had a preacher read no words or sign no papers. But there's been women that I sort of had an arrangement with. We just taken it for granted that we was married without all the fuss and feathers. We had all the benefits without the complications. Time come we didn't get along no more. We wasn't held by nothing but a slipknot. Worked out pretty good.
Michael couldn't see his father and mother living under such an arrangement. He didn't think he could see himself doing it either.
Doesn't seem like enough.
You must have left a girl back yonder in Tennessee.
No, not in Tennessee.
Then it's Marie. No, my kind of partnership wouldn't work with a girl like her. If you want to put your boots under her bed, you'll have to have everything wrote up legal and proper. Ain't nothing temporary about her kind, and there oughtn't to be. She's like your mama. She's for life.
If I have any life left.
You're too young to die. Me and Lucero are too ornery. Every bad tide I was ever in, something always come along last minute.
Michael looked over the edge of the gully and felt his pulse pick up.
It better come along pretty quick.
Two soldiers had left the trees. They were trying to skirt around and cross over the gully at a shadow point and reach the higher ground behind it. Michael didn't want to kill anyone except Rodriguez. He took careful aim. One of the soldiers stumbled and fell, Michael's bullet in his leg. The other paused in confusion, then stopped to help him to his feet. He started back toward the trees, the wounded man's arm around his shoulder. He looked fearfully toward the gully, expecting to be cut down.
Damn shame to have to shoot some poor soldier to probably join the army just to get himself enough to eat.
Michael's conscience nagged him a little, but self-preservation was a stronger consideration. Rodriguez was cursing the unwounded soldier for not proceeding on his mission and letting the other one lie there.
Rodriguez! Calm yourself if you are not seven kinds of a cringing coward!
You are all going to die today, I think.
They come pretty soon now.
Damn, I hate shooting them boys when it's him we come for. We'll likely never see him.
Michael wiped sweat from his burning eyes and from the palms of his hands. He grimly set his mind on Marie in an effort to avoid thinking about what was coming. Lucero crossed himself.
Damn rheumatism was fixing to get me anyway.
Michael thought for a moment the shot was the signal for a charge. The sounds were not what Michael would have expected from soldiers starting a run against the enemy. It sounded more like panic. He saw a slight movement from the top of the knoll that overlooked the trees. It came to him that the shot had originated there, not from the soldiers, and it had been directed into the trees. Several soldiers, maneuvering to get away from this new source of danger, let themselves become exposed to the three men in the gully. But those men held their fire. They waited for Rodriguez to appear in their sights. Eli frowned in puzzlement, staring toward the knoll.
Friend of yours, Lucero?
I cannot see. I do not know who it could be.
Michael knew. Pride surged as recognition came.
That brother of mine. He'll follow me to his death someday.
Andrew?
Andrew. When he was a kid, he used to follow me out of hunting after I'd tell him he couldn't. He followed me across Tennessee after I said I was going alone.
Seems to me I remember a boy that followed after his daddy one time.
Michael saw a surging of men backward and forward, though he couldn't tell what they were doing. A man burst out of the trees on horseback, spurring eastward. Even at the distance, Michael knew the uniform.
Rodriguez.
Michael leveled his rifle at the retreating figure.
Damn it.
A soldier came out of the trees, waving a cloth that at some time had been white. Eli and Lucero glanced at each other.
¿Cuál es su intención?
The soldier took a couple more uncertain steps.
Nos rendimos!
Several other soldiers came out, laying down their rifles, raising their hands. Andrew disappeared from the knoll. In a minute, he reappeared on horseback. He rode up as the remaining soldiers came out into the open, all but three. One was the soldier who had Michael's bullet in his leg. Another, older than the rest, lay on his back, dying. The third was doing what he could to tend him. Eli and Lucero climbed out of the gully and walked forward to meet the soldiers. Michael reloaded his rifle as a precaution and followed. Andrew raised his hand in the slightest of greetings. He was grinning.
What have you fellows been doing out in the sunshine? Shade had been a lot cooler.
Michael was unsure whether to hug his neck or kick him where his legs joined together in the back.
Little brother, you are a vexation and a pain.
But handy just the same. Looked to me like you was fixing to have a little difficulty getting out of that ditch.
How'd you find us?
Just followed your tracks. It wasn't no big thing.
Eli shook Andrew's hand. Then he turned to Michael.
The boys say the wounded man in yonder is an old soldier named Sanchez. When Andrew started shooting into their trees and broke up the charge, Rodriguez tried to make the men come against us anyway. Old Sanchez, he put up an argument. Said there wasn't no more of them going to die for a Guchapin who was fixing to lose his head anyway as soon as the revolution started. Told Rodriguez if he knowed what was good for him, he'd make a run for Louisiana and take sanctuary. Rodriguez shot him. Then Rodriguez grabbed him a rifle and held off the soldiers while he got his horse. They told him he'd better head for Louisiana, because if he went to Nacogdoches or the bar, they'd find him and kill him for what he'd done to Sanchez.
Michael looked toward the east. Rodriguez was no longer in sight.
That's the direction he took, all right. Toward the Sabine.
Then let us get him.
Lucero turned and trotted back toward his horse, still safe in the deep gully.
Andrew, catch me one of the soldiers' horses!
Michael sprinted for the gully and Big Red. Lieutenant Armando Rodriguez was not frightened so much as simply outraged. He slowed his horse once he was beyond sight of the soldiers he had left behind, and those Americanos whose reason for being on Spanish soil he had not attempted to question. Smugglers, probably, or plain bandits. Either way, they should have died, and would have, had it not been for cowardice and treachery among his own men. He seethed with indignation at the mutinous behavior, and over the fact that, under the circumstances, he had no choice but to retreat from superior numbers. But it would be temporary. He would be back, and the bastards would hang. What galled most of all was that he, an officer, and by right of birth a gentleman, had been forced to back away from inferior men who should deem it an honor to curry his horse. That was the natural consequence of permitting those of lower station to presume rights to which the circumstances of their births had not entitled them. The Spanish conquistadores who first took this land from God and King had not done so with an olive branch in a gentle hand. They had conquered the savages with fire and sword, whip and chain. Gentle words were for the mission padres, who preached of peace, but cried to the military for help when they couldn't control their primitive charges. It was the military who knew how to contend with the recalcitrants. First among the Indians, and later among the mixed-race mestizos, who arose out of the union of lusty Spaniards with the native Indian women. That had been the first failure of the Purebloods, Rodriguez had always believed. The recognition of these mongrel hordes as citizens, granting them rights that should have been reserved for the gente de razón, the people of reason. Rodriguez had often demonstrated the proper cure for rebellion. Death, swift and without mercy. Show the least sign of softness, and the unleashed dogs would cut him to pieces. A while ago they almost had, and all because, badly outnumbered, he had briefly brooked argument and allowed them to become emboldened. He had corrected his impropriety by shooting down that insolent old Sanchez the way he should have done a long time ago, the way he should have done the disloyal Sergeant Alessandro Zaragoza. As for the others, they would see Rodriguez again. They would die like the dogs they were, whining for mercy until the ropes choked off their cries and their faces turned black in the strangling. And their families, those who had any, would share in his righteous wrath. He savored the image as he savored the thought of returning one day to the proper environment for the gentlemen. Monclova, perhaps, or even Mexico City itself, where the wine was good, the conversation stimulating, the women beautiful and properly appreciative of an officer who had done his duty to the crown. But now he must see to the necessities of the moment. Before yesterday, he had never crossed into the territory of the United States. The thought had always been distasteful. The Americans were a rude, greedy people, unmindful of the deference due a gentleman by his inferiors. That he was obliged to do so now, almost as a fugitive, was a humiliating circumstance for which many would be called upon to pay, and soon. He could feel the horse tiring beneath him, its pace labored. He slowed to a walk and finally dismounted. He led the mount into the deep shade beneath a large oak. He loosened the saddle to allow the animal to breathe more easily. There had been few better horses in Bar than this one, but much had been demanded of it. The long pursuit after the insurrectionist Galindo and the turncoat Zaragoza, the aborted ride toward Nacogdoches, the retreat just now from the Soldiers' Rebellion. He probably wouldn't find as good a one in Louisiana. Another indignity for which he would exact a stern price from those who had wronged him. He had rested the horse for perhaps 20 minutes when he saw riders coming. He tensed, counting them. Four. These were not his traitorous soldiers in pursuit of him. They must be those damned Americans. He had first seen them yesterday at the cabin on the east side of the Sabine with the arrogant mestizo rebel Lucero who had cursed him so darkly. Running into them this morning had been unexpected, as had their fierce defense in the gully. Americans gave up fairly easily most of the time, expecting the sort of lenient treatment they received at the hands of authorities in their own country. That was one reason they would all be defeated in the long run. They were soft, forgiving of their enemies. Perhaps one day Rodriguez would be so fortunate as to lead a strong Spanish force and retake Louisiana for the Spanish crown. If the government were only in the hands of the military instead of so many weak-willed civilian bureaucrats, more interested in enriching themselves than in preserving the empire. He remounted reluctantly and looked around for a wooded area where he might slip out of sight until the four horsemen passed by. But it became evident as he watched that they were not behind him by happenstance. They were deliberately following his tracks. Alarm stung him like a nettle.
Why?
What could this miserable rabble want of him? He sensed that it would not be wise to stay and ask them. He called upon the tired horse to move into a gallop.
Here!
When he looked back, the four had put their horses into a run and were closing the distance. He tried to remember how far it should be to the river, but was unsure. He spurred the horse for all the speed he could wring out of it. The four riders kept gaining ground, pushing closer. They were within range. If one of them wanted, he could probably jump from his horse and have some chance of hitting Rodriguez with his rifle. Rodriguez swallowed hard, trying to calm his growing anxiety. He found himself on a dimly beaten trail, formed over a long period of time by the hooves of many horses. His pulse racing faster than the horse beneath him, he was almost ready to turn to face them for a fight when he saw the heavy line of trees that marked the river. He saw a cabin on a distant bank and realized it was the one he had visited yesterday in his quest for Galindo, Zaragoza. Those four riders, damn them, had driven him back to it. They were pounding hard to close the distance, trying to catch him before he could reach the water. He spurred viciously and plunged in at the place where yesterday he had shot Galindo out of the saddle. In a moment, the horse was swimming. Rodriguez had his hands full to avoid being swept away by the current. He was heavy with armament, a pistol in his belt along with a shot pouch, a saber at his side, a rifle slung over his arm, heavy boots and spurs. It would not do to be cast off now. He was in the middle of the stream by the time the riders reached the edge of the water. It was in his mind that when he came to the opposite bank, he could turn and shoot two of them while they struggled with the river. With any luck, he could reload and get the other two before they could reach him. Almost to the bank, he lifted his gaze toward the cabin. His eyes widened, for he saw three figures standing there halfway down the slope. All wore the uniform of Spanish soldiers. His throat went dry as he recognized Zaragoza and the two young troopers who had deserted yesterday. He tried to shout orders for them to stand by to help him, but the words did not come. One of the soldiers handed Zaragoza a rifle, and he stood in front of him to allow the sergeant to level it firmly across his shoulder. He leveled it at Rodriguez. Rodriguez tried to whip the horse around, but it floundered and almost went out from under him. The strength dropped out of him. He let go his rifle and grabbed at the saddle with both hands, but could not find it. As the animal thrashed, Rodriguez saw the four horsemen coming toward him from the Texas side, and he saw the three figures standing on the Louisiana bank. All this before a blazing glare blinded his eyes and he felt himself sliding into the water. His arms and legs felt paralyzed, though he tried desperately to move them to fight the current that caught him. His mouth filled with water as he went under. In his mind, he cried out for mercy, but his weight carried him down, and he made no sound as he slipped into the icy hands of death. Michael was unaware that he had been holding his breath until his lungs began to ache.
Drown, you bastard, drown!
There was a momentary swirling of the water where Rodriguez had gone down, but most of it was caused by the panic thrashing of the lieutenant's horse, frightened by the shot and fighting the current until its feet found solid ground. The animal came up on the Louisiana shore, dripping. Rodriguez never came up. Michael watched in silence.
Well, looks like Sergeant Zaragoza taking vengeance out of your hands.
Michael could see the sergeant on the far bank with the two soldiers, still holding the smoking rifle. He knew a moment of disappointment, but it passed.
That son of a bitch is dead. And he died with his eyes open, knowing what was happening to him, like Papa and so many others he killed. It don't matter much who pulled the trigger.
Andrew had drawn up beside him.
Well, the debt has been squared. Now maybe you can get Texas out of your system.
Michael turned and looked behind him at the open stretch of prairie over which they had ridden. It was as he had seen it long ago with Mordecai. He felt reluctant to cross back over to the Louisiana side.
No, the feeling about Texas is as strong as ever. Maybe even stronger now. I want to come back and stay. I've been thinking about that man, Austin. I wonder if he's still in Natchitoches.
I reckon we'll just have to go and see.
The four riders pushed their horses out into the river, not even pausing at the place where Rodriguez had gone down. As they approached Natchitoches, Michael stopped each person they met and inquired about Stephen Austin. The first three had never heard of him. The fourth was a Frenchman riding a fine black stallion, followed by a slave on a gray mule. The farmer remembered encountering Austin in Villeray's mercantile store the previous day. He had considered Austin a most agreeable, if perhaps misguided, young man, whose notions about settling American families among the Spanish in Texas were regrettably unrealistic.
Mexico is like a boiling pot. The steam will build up, and one day the country will explode in the faces of the Spanish crown and its servants.
I think the lid's already coming undone.
And who knows what will remain in the pot after the fire has burnt itself out.
Michael and Andrew watched the farmer and the slave continue on their way westward.
At least Austin ain't left for Texas yet.
If the Spaniards knew we'd already been in Texas and what we'd been up to, they might find a cozy spot for us in a dungeon someplace, or just shoot us like Rodriguez wanted to.
I wasn't figuring on telling them. We're just a couple of Tennessee farm boys, innocent as the day we was born.
Not quite that innocent. Don't that whistle set your back to tickling? Makes me think of cities I've heard of but never seen, like New Orleans and St. Louis.
You wouldn't like them, not for long. You're a farm boy at heart, little brother. You're the kind who finds him a place and stays put.
Ain't a thing wrong with that. I thought the whole reason for us coming so far was to find us both a place.
There's still a lot of Papa in me. It'll be a hard thing to fight.
But Papa always come home by and by, because he always had something to come home to. And somebody. You got somebody, Michael. You just gotta work up the courage to ask her.
I know. I remember how it used to be with Mama.
Mama took Papa the way she found him. Sure, she got lonesome, but you remember the light in her eyes when Papa came home? She wouldn't have traded places with the richest woman in the Tidewater.
They came to the river, where flatboats drifted southward, and two steamboats chuffed busily northward against the reddish current. Natchitoches was up to its elbows in commerce, and loving it from all Michael could see. If Austin succeeded in his plan, this place would become a gateway, even busier than it was now. Just up from the riverbank, he noticed a large tent with several wooden barrels stacked in front and two large wagons beside it. He recognized the young woman standing beside the tent's open flaps, next to a crude wooden sign nailed to a post freshly set into the ground. Its awkwardly formed letters read, "Pure Kentucky Whiskey, Sally Boone Prop." Warmth rose in his face. Michael tried to ride past.
Michael Lewis! You fixing to go on like you didn't even know who I was?
Sally Boone strode a few paces out from the tent, and Michael knew no graceful way to avoid stopping to talk with her. Uncomfortably, he touched his fingers to the brim of his hat.
Howdy, Sally. Glad to see y'all made it in all right.
Sally wore a new dress, blazing red and tight enough to be a far better advertisement than the crudely painted sign.
Wasn't no more trouble after the Reverend Fairweather got religion. We just set up shop here yesterday, and already we've sold enough to halfway pay us for coming. I never had no idea so many folks here was thirsty for a taste of good Kentucky whiskey. Y'all get down and come in for a little drink with us, why don't you? I'm tickled to see you, and I'm sure Cephas will be, too.
Michael spotted Cephas working inside the tent with the big black man, Marcus. He had his doubts about Cephas's joy in seeing him, especially if Sally had given him any inkling of what had passed between them one long, warm night on the trail.
I reckon we better be moving along. We gotta go see a man.
It was tempting to linger. Sally's smile was infectious, and the red dress improved Michael's memory for details. Sally casually took hold of Big Red's bridle reins up near the bit so the horse would not move.
Business is looking so good, we're already talking about Cephas going back with the wagons and fetching us a couple more loads.
Sounds mighty prosperous.
It'll be lonesome with him gone. Hoped maybe me and you we might visit sometime.
I expect to be going over into Texas pretty soon.
Sally made no secret of her disappointment. She looked at Andrew.
How about you, little brother?
Andrew grinned like a bear eating honey. Michael could have kicked him.
I'll be going with Michael, but it may not be today.
Well, you both know where I'm at.
We sure do. And the best of luck to you.
Baptiste Villeray told him where to find Austin, down by the river at a set of corrals where he was putting together a string of horses and mules for the long trip to San Antonio de Bar. Villeray frowned.
You would go with him?
If he'll take us. I've set my mind on finding a place down there somewhere.
Villeray stared so hard into Michael's eyes that Michael had to look away.
May I ask you something, one man to another? My daughter Marie has been crying since you have been gone. Have you an interest in her?
Michael was taken aback by the directness of the question.
Yes, sir, I have.
I would hope you have no bad intentions toward her.
Michael remembered his mother, the long, lonely days and nights she had waited in vain for Mordecai to come home.
Yes, sir. I have. The worst you can imagine.
He found Austin where Villeray said he would, examining some pack mules he had bought for the journey. Michael approached and extended his hand.
Remember us, Mr. Austin? Michael and Andrew Lewis? Down by the boat landing the other day, you asked if we'd like to go with you into Texas. Well, sir, we would.
It will not be an easy trip.
Can't be no harder than what we made coming this far. Me and Andrew, we're pretty handy with animals and such like. We think we could be of help to you.
We leave at daybreak.
Michael shoved out his hand again.
We'll be here, waiting.
As they turned the corner into the street where the Villeray house stood, Andrew reined up.
Just a little ways more. What are you stopping for?
I've always come trailing after you like your shadow. This one time, I don't think I ought to get in your way. I think I'll go back and try that whiskey Sally Boone offered.
Don't take too much. And be damn sure you don't take nothing else.
Now, big brother, don't be a vexation and a pain.
Andrew turned his horse and went back in the direction he had come. Michael touched his heels to Big Red's ribs. At the Villeray house, he saw the slender Marie standing on the big porch, her hands clasped in front of her. He sensed that she had seen him as soon as he'd turned the corner. Her father must have told her he'd be coming along. She watched him for a minute, then hurried down the steps. Marie ran to him, and they clung to each other in the middle of the dirt street. Michael became aware of neighbors watching, of Mrs. Villeray standing on her porch, wringing her hands in dismay. It did not matter.
Your daddy asked me if I had bad intentions for you. I told him I did.
Marie looked up, a flicker of disappointment in her dark eyes, but she kept her arms tight around him.
The church would frown, but whatever you want of me, you can have. Bad intentions are better than no intentions at all.
I'm leaving for Texas with Austin tomorrow. The worst thing I could do to you would be to ask you to marry me as soon as I get back.
Marie laid her head against his chest.
Then do your worst, Michael Lewis, because I will be here waiting.
Elmer Kelton's Sons of Texas is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1989, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Daniel Stevens, Drew Copus, Yasmin Toison, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, James Konachek, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Ren Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Thomas Keegan, Jeff Allen, Laura Reichert, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, Joseph Thornhill, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Danny Gavigan, Lily Beacon, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Johann Detweiler. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Sons of Texas, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Huey Calloway and Texas Rangers series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Open my vision. Open my vision. Show me what I seek.
In a forgotten time, when ice shrouded the earth, a powerful dreamer heard a desperate cry and went forth on a spirit journey. Two boys. One born in light, a dream in his eyes. The other born in blood, a raven feather clutched in his fist. Between the dreamer and the child of light, a bond was formed.
Yes, you dream, child. And now that I know you, I'll be waiting.
Son, father's losing his strength.
Cloud Mother wraps herself around Blue Sky Man and sucks up his warmth. This year, Mammoth will die. The people will wither.
Where are you, Father Son?
17 long darks later, young Runs in Light braved the cold and the spirits of the Long Dark to find food for his people. It was then that he met Wolf.
My brother, let me kill you. The people starve. We are worthy of you.
Renewed by the heart blood of Wolf, Runs in Light fell into an exhausted sleep, and Wolf gave him a dream.
There, you see? There to the south, through the crack in the ice. Walk with me.
This is the land of the people. Bless you for showing me this way. I will bring the people here.
Runs in Light brings meat, and he brings a dream.
Wolf gave the meat to me to take us south. He came in a dream and showed me the way.
You go south to death! Hear me, Father Son. I, Crowcaller, have your dream.
I follow Wolf. Anyone who eats the meat of Wolf follows my dream.
What? Words of valor from my brother?
You and me, brother, we're the future. Don't do what you're planning. Or in the end, one of us will have to destroy the other.
You'd best hope it never comes to that, brother.
And so the people split in two between the dreamers. Dancing Fox, beloved of Runs in Light, was obliged to go north with her husband, Crowcaller.
Dancing Fox, here you are.
Raven Hunter, what do you want?
I want you for my woman, Dancing Fox.
Crowcaller, he'll...
Crowcaller is a foolish old man. I can handle him. You won't be mine.
Never.
And I'll have to do it the hard way.
No!
Runs in Light led his people south, where he found Heron, the dreamer he was destined to find from the hour of his birth.
Look me in the eyes, boy. Tell me what Wolf told you.
There's a hole in the big ice. He said if we went that way, the people would be saved.
You have to find the hole inside you before you'll find the one in the ice.
Meanwhile, Raven Hunter followed his own dark path.
Ready? Let's go.
Follow me! Follow, and we'll drive these others from our land.
Graphic Audio presents a majestic new series, North America's Forgotten Past, by W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. Book 1. People of the Wolf. Part 1. In Graphic Audio.
You men are aware you're trespassing on private property, aren't you?
What is your name, boy?
My name's Cal. What's yours?
Lazarus. Lazarus Cain. Have you been saved, Cal?
Saved from what?
Why, from hell and damnation, of course.
What's all this got to do with the fact you men are stealing my boss's cattle?
Now hold on, boys. I can handle this young pup alone.
The Lord giveth, and he taketh away, my good boy.
When Smoke Jensen's friend and ranch hand is brutally shot while protecting his ranch, there isn't a demon in hell that could still Smoke Jensen's vengeful, bloody hands.
Did you find any papers on the man Cal described?
About the nearest one I saw was a man named Lazarus Cain. He and his gang did some raiding down in Arkansas recently. There was no mention of his heading this way.
Well, if this Kane has decided to pay us a visit and did this to Cal, he's gonna wish he never left Arkansas.
Don't miss Smoke Jensen's bloody quest for revenge in Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 24, Guns of the Mountain Man.
You're no match for me, Jensen! I'll kill you before you can clear leather!
You reach for them guns, and one of us is gonna die.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.